Hey guys, and welcome to today's episode of Give It The Beans. Now, unfortunately, I don't have a funny story for today's guest because I don't know him, but he got in touch with me, interested in doing an episode on anabolic steroids and the research that he does. So I'm going to try my best not to get tongue twisted here, but it's Alexander Colliari Turner. Was that right, buddy?
Yes, perfect.
Awesome, man. Now, for anyone listening that perhaps doesn't know who you are, what I would love you to do is just give the listeners a big introduction of yourself, sort of your career to date, but then just a bit of a background into your research and kind of what you're looking at, what you're aiming to do with that. That'd be fantastic.
Yes, so I'm a third year PhD student at the University of Brighton, which is in South England. And our research group and my PhD is a project that is trying to answer the question if muscle exhibits a memory of anabolic steroid exposure, with the idea being if you've taken anabolic steroids and then you've come off them, although you may lose muscle mass, is there still some advantages retained inside your muscle many months afterwards? As there has actually been some research now in animals, models, in mice, to suggest that muscle does exhibit a memory of anabolic steroid exposure and there is actually a retained benefit after stopping using the drugs. We've now been conducting our research for 2 years. We are always looking for new participants. So if anyone is male, age between 20 and 40 years old, and is a current anabolic steroid user or a past anabolic steroid user, or even someone who is on TRT, you may be classified as a past user depending on the date of your last supraphysiological exposure and your current dosage of TRT. All of those people are eligible to get involved for this research. Ideally, if you are a current user, you will visit us around the time where your cycle is close to its conclusion. And then you will then revisit us after 20 weeks, where you have then gone off cycle, you've conducted your own post-cycle therapy to kickstart your own testosterone production again, and then you'll come back to our laboratory so we can measure your muscle mass through time and take a muscle biopsy of the trapezius muscle and see through time, is there potentially any retained benefits? As of recording this podcast with you, Vaughan, we've sampled now 42 people.
Wow.
And we've had three of those people to return. This is the largest time course study that's been conducted in humans, and we're always trying to get more people. We can reimburse your travel expenses from wherever you are within the United Kingdom or Europe to come and take part in the research. And that will include one night's accommodation locally as well. But so far, we've recruited 5 sedentary people, 15 non-users, 16 current users, of which 3 of those have returned for a second visit post-cycle, and also 6 previous users. And the reason why we're recruiting previous users are those who have stopped taking anabolic steroids 1 or more years ago, is because we want to see, does their muscle exhibit a memory of that previous exposure? Does it look like the muscle of a current user, or does it look like the muscle of someone who's never been exposed to anabolics ever before? As there is also one human report published online that does indeed suggest that even up to after 10 years ago, you've stopped taking steroids, there are still some changes in your muscle fibers, and that might also be another indication that human muscle exhibits a memory of anabolic steroid exposure.
That's wicked. Now, I think that the term muscle memory gets often thrown about quite loosely, with no one really having much of an understanding of what it is. So could you give the listeners a bit of an idea of, I mean, you can go ahead and give the scientific version, but then like in a layman's terms, like what do we mean when we're speaking about muscle memory exactly?
So muscle memory can be thought of in 2 ways. You have the muscle memory, say, if you were a child and you learned how to ride a bike, and then you don't ride a bike until your late teenage years, and you might find it quite easy to reacquire that skill. People call that muscle memory. That's not a memory inside your actual muscle. That's more a memory in the nerves that connect your brain to your muscle. So the nervous connections that are involved in acquiring that skill can easily be reactivated in a simple way, so that you can always ride a bike if you've learned how to do it. Muscle memory in the scientific sense, that phrase is used actually when you're thinking about a memory of mass. The idea being, if you've had a large amount of muscle mass and you lose it, does your muscle now in that state of lower muscle mass remember that it was previously large? With the idea being, if it was once previously large, it might be able to get large again at a much quicker rate than it did in the first place. So if you are in a tragic accident and something happens and you break your leg and it's put in a cast, you may lose muscle mass, but you might find that when you go back to resistance training that you can build your leg muscle up quickly and get it back to where it was in the past at a much quicker rate than it would ever take you to build that amount of muscle mass in the first place. And that's what we'll be talking about, muscle memory. Scientifically, it's reported to likely be caused because when muscle grows, the nuclei inside muscle fibers, which are called myonuclei, which are the structural units responsible for making proteins, they increase in number. And the more of those you have, the more proteins the muscle will be able to make, the bigger the muscle will be able to grow. And even if you lose muscle mass and the muscle shrinks in size and the fibers actually get smaller, those nuclei are retained through time. At least that's the current theory of the model. And because they're retained through time, all you have to do is reactivate them again. They'll start making proteins again, and they'll be able to get you back to the level of muscle mass that you might have had before, or very close to that level. And that is a memory that of that previously large muscle that you once had.
I think that is probably the best explanation anyone's ever given for like a very scientific term. The fact that you gave the layman's term and then went into, I think that anyone listening that doesn't know what myonuclei should roughly know now. But I think what the point comes across as is a lot of people that will perhaps take anabolics and then, let's say we're talking about bodybuilding, but we can look at Olympic athletes, right? Because we all know, I think it was Justin Gatlin, right, served a drug ban, and then it was like 3 years, and he came back, then he was world champion at the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Now, and for testosterone as well.
Yeah, right. Now, you're kind of thinking, well, that's not really fair if when he comes off, he serves a ban for 2 or 3 years, but when he goes back to training, he's still got this increase in myonuclei. Now, I guess one of the questions I'm going to throw to you, and I don't mean to trip you up here because it's not on the question list, is that although he's retained that myonuclei, if he was necessarily, if someone's quote unquote off cycle and they still got the myonuclei, does that mean that they can, will they perhaps be stronger, like retain as much muscle mass? And I'm just thinking for someone out there thinking, right, well, there's a lot of psychological problems for people wanting to come off, and they think, when I come off, oh, I'm going to be small, I'm not going to be as strong. But I guess what you're kind of saying is the research that you're doing, what you're looking at, will mean that that might not be as drastic as they're thinking. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, so there has actually been one time course study published in the past on humans that were administered testosterone. So if we're looking at the research, that's the only research we've got. Anecdotally, we know a lot of stories of what happens when people cycle off anabolic steroids in regards to their muscle mass. But that research study showed that yes, you do lose muscle mass, obviously, when you come off anabolic steroids. And anecdotally, that's obviously reported. Anecdotally, it would also be reported, because in that study, they only looked at muscle mass changes and nothing else. They did no biopsies to look at nuclei, no strength testing, nothing. But anecdotally, it'd be that not only do you lose muscle mass, but you also lose strength. And that can be confounded by potentially the low testosterone environment that someone may experience if they don't adequately handle their period of coming off. And although an athlete, say in a doping situation as well, if they're taking steroids for performance enhancing and then they come off, although yes, they might lose muscle mass and strength, the idea of muscle memory is that if the nuclei they accumulated from that mass is retained, then their muscle is going to have a larger, high amount of myonuclei for a very long period of time. And the mice study that exposed the mice to anabolic steroids and took the anabolic steroids away, they actually lost muscle mass and ended up the exact same size as the control group who had never been exposed to anabolic steroids ever.
Wow.
And the key difference, though, was inside their muscle fibers, the myonuclei were still, on average, 28% higher. And that was after 3 months of no steroids, which is actually, for mice, 12% of its lifespan.
Wow.
And the idea there is that mice probably at that time point has obviously lost mass. It probably is therefore going to be not as strong as it was in the past, but its nuclei are still high. And the idea of still having a high amount of nuclei is that, one, you could probably recover better from workouts because the muscle damage you experience is repaired by those nuclei. And if you just have more nuclei in your fibers, it's likely your protein turnover is going to be higher. That's just theorized. It's not been proven, but it would make logical sense. And the other one would be your propensity to build muscle is probably always better. Once you get back out of that lower hormonal environment post-cycle and then you commit to potentially a natural gaining phase, if your nuclei are higher, then you're probably going to build more muscle than if they were less. You might never, and it's very likely, you'd never achieve the same level of same amount of muscle mass that you ever would have had on a cycle, but you might be able to put on more muscle at that point where you're off cycle and natural, in inverted commas, yeah, than maybe you ever could if you'd never taken anabolics in the past before. And so that's one way of the potential there being a retained benefit. Obviously, our research study is trying to find that out because we're measuring guys' muscle mass and seeing how many kilograms of muscle do they potentially lose post-cycle, how much do their muscle fibers shrink in size, but do their nuclei numbers remain the same? Then you can then try to think about, well, what's the benefit of having more nuclei? It would be, in theory, building muscle for you in the future is going to be easier than if you had less, and also you might recover better from your workouts.
Yeah, and I think that for any guy listening that is, I'm going to say, quote-unquote addicted to taking steroids because they're worried about perhaps not or losing size, I would hope that that serves as like a sort of calming effect that, okay, you know, it's probably wise that they come off for a period of time for their health, but if so they should choose to go back on, it's not going to take them a great deal of time to get that size back that they had. Because, I'll be honest with you, like, over the years, before I got a little bit clued up and before I'd done my degree and stuff, I was always in my head being like that, fuck, I don't even know if I could come off because, God, what's going to happen? And then you look at guys like Dr. Dean who posts about it, hey, this was me at 120 nanomole, this is me at 26, here's where I've lost size, blah, blah, and then jumps back on cycle and then he's up back at the same muscularity and you go, right. That, I think that the industry itself is a bit more educated now and I think that guys like yourself are turning the tide because, you know, years ago, mate, I was ignorant. I was always like, oh, studies in a mouse, I'm not a mouse, you know, like, how's that relatable to me? And you know what, there's probably people out there that think the same. So from yourself as a researcher, could you give us a kind of a rough explanation of, well, why we do so much research on mice, but how that research is actually still applicable to what we're doing right now?
So the animal models are the best and they were one of the quickest way to do research. They're cost effective. You can manage all of the variables in mice. You haven't got any problems with people not showing up to the lab, being late or anything like that. Because I mean, you're fully in control of everything. You control their food, their training, their doses, everything. And obviously a mice is a mammal. So its muscle is very similar to our mammalian muscle. There are some differences in metabolism and things like that. But in terms of muscle growth, it's a good proxy. And all of the studies that I've been referring to about this model of my nuclei being accumulated from growth and then retained, even when muscle fibers shrink, they've all been conducted in mice. And one might think that that is a potential flaw of the research, and that has now been identified, and that's why muscle memory as a field is now transitioning into doing human studies. And up until the summer of 2019, there was not actually any 2019, around the summertime, there was not actually any published research on humans being trained and then doing nothing and then seeing do they retain the benefit from their normal resistance training. And this is where it does get a little bit complicated because the mice studies with normal resistance training, actually, the ones that are talked about my nuclei being accumulated and then retained, what they did, which you can't do in humans, was they would chop one of the muscles off the calf of the mice. So if you chop one of the calf muscles off of the leg of the mice, it's forced to walk around in the cage on a different calf muscle. And that body weight bearing on that muscle is so extreme that it causes a large amount of growth and you get a large amount of nuclei being incorporated. Okay. And that was the mechanism of causing muscle growth. And then what they would do is then they'd cause the muscle to then shrink in size. And they'd either chemically inhibit all nervous contraction of the muscle. So they'd inject something, it would mean the muscle just couldn't contract. Or they'd cut the nervous supply to the muscle so it couldn't contract. Or they'd just do an old school method where they just hang the legs of the mice in the air so it can't walk around anymore. And then that way there's no muscle contraction. So if there's no muscle contraction, you inevitably will lose muscle mass. And they injected dyes into single muscle fibers and looked at what would happen. And you can see really, really clearly that the fibers shrink in size during all of those three different methods, but the nuclei numbers remain exactly the same. And that was how the theoretical model was built on. But that same group realized this is all in mice. And this is also involving quite a brutal method of resistance training that's not necessarily applicable to humans. But it's helped us build this model to try and understand what's going on. So the next step is then to try and do the human study. And they did actually do a human study, and it was published last year. It was 35 weeks long. So you've got to give them some kudos to doing that, because that's a serious long time to be doing a single study. And they had 19 people. Now, bear in mind, these 19 people were sedentary and they had never trained before in their lives. But they trained a single leg for 10 weeks. And then they had 20 weeks of doing nothing. And then they retrained the exact same leg for 5 weeks and also the other leg for 5 weeks that had never been trained before. And what they found was quite unfortunate for them was in the 19 people they trained, only 7 of them actually accumulated nuclei in their fibers after 10 weeks of training. So it seems that the training potentially was not hard enough. But actually in those 7 people that they trained, 6 of them lost myonuclei after 20 weeks of doing absolutely nothing. Right. And that obviously goes against the whole hypothesis that was built up in animals. But this study has to be taken with a pinch of salt, because the training was only 10 weeks and it was on people that had never done any resistance training before. Okay. So the researchers actually conclude that because only 7 of the people accumulated nuclei, they don't actually think that their study in the end was a robust enough test of the muscle memory hypothesis. And so they're going to go conduct another research study to try and see again what happens.
Yeah.
That's one human study. Then there was also another human study that was published, but this was in humans that were over the age of 65 and had an average age of 70. And essentially the exact same thing was found, that after resistance training, their nuclei numbers went up, their fibers got bigger, and they gained muscle mass, exactly as you'd expect. But this time they actually left them for a year. And when they came back to them 1 year later, they actually had lost all of their nuclei. But now you see there's a problem, because the two studies in humans that have shown nuclei have been lost, you've got it done in untrained people who only trained for 10 weeks, and in 70-year-olds who only trained for 24 weeks. So there's some extreme differences in age. And so how do we know that their findings are actually true or accurate? Essentially, we don't. So more studies are now trying to be conducted in humans. In terms of regards to steroid usage in humans, there's never been a time course study that's looked at myonuclei numbers in actual human steroid users, which is why we're conducting our research, because the only research we've got at the moment is that mouse study.
Yeah.
And if there's now questions being thrown up in the air in regards to nuclei being permanent in humans from normal resistance training, then the questions might reside the same for anabolic steroid usage. But that's why we need to get this data from our project to try and see what is correct and what we find.
Yeah.
And also with the human studies, I think that both those human studies have two problems with them. The first one for the first study is the fact it was on untrained people for only 10 weeks. And the second study was on 70-year-olds. So that's not necessarily going to be applicable to 20s, 30s, 40-year-olds. So I think it would be interesting if a study is conducted on more trained people who are subjected to a resistance training program and then a period of doing nothing and then seeing if their myonuclei have gone down. Because it could be that once you've sort of accumulated lots of myonuclei from previous resistance training over a long period of time, if you take a bit of a time off, they don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
If you're brand new to resistance training and you've only ever done it 10 weeks and never done any exercise in your life before, I'm not that surprised you would lose it after that, because it's very new.
Yeah.
But if you've got a continuous training stimulus going on, then it would make sense that you probably would retain the things you've accumulated, because that adaptation is serving a purpose because you're continuously doing it. Then maybe you're going to want to retain the nuclei. So that's why I think the field is going to go now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So.
But yeah, I mean, I think that, dude, I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because often my first thought process when someone speaks about, that is, okay, well, how hard were they training? And what was the population like? Because you look at any competitive bodybuilder that goes fucking hard 5-6 times a week, some of them might perhaps do more, and try and compare like that just same body type with whether it's a mouse or whether it's a 70-year-old. It's just not applicable. But one thing I wanted to pick your brain at, and a question just came in my head, is that when we look at the mice studies, obviously they had an increase in myonuclei, right? But when steroid users will take, when guys will take steroids, they're going to get that increase from resistance training. Now, the minute that they stop training, obviously, we go straight into a period of, test levels being absolute zero. Now, it's kind of well evident, and Dr. Dean's pretty good for this, at, restoring HPT axis. So a lot of guys will go ahead and try and kickstart that with, whether they're using, Exogenous LH, which would come in the form of HCG, to try and regain that. Now, with anyone that's sort of trying to be involved with your study, do you tell them to abstain from that? Or, because what I'm thinking in my head is that interim period where they go from, let's say someone was blasting, right?
Yeah.
And they're up at like 120 nanomol and they go to zero. In that sort of time period, of course they're going to lose muscle mass. But if it's me, and when I come off it later on this year, very quickly, when I hit zero, I'm going right back up. You know what I mean? But that's obviously not what you would see in rats, because they couldn't PCT, right?
No, although they just remove the drug and that's it. They don't do anything.
Yeah, so I guess one of the limitations I'm thinking in my head would be, from a rat model to a human model, is that would be a huge... Well, maybe the question to you is, would that be a huge difference in the case of bottoming test out for a period of time, which, we don't know how long really individuality it's going to take to come back, but
yes,
it could potentially come back quicker if we use something like HCG. So what's your thoughts?
Yes, so well, with our research, it's totally an observational study, and that's really the only way ethically we've been able to do something like this is we are just monitoring people through time on whatever they're doing themselves. Ideally though, we want people who are cycling off, and then they do conduct their own PCT, and then they come back. That's the most interesting for us, and that's what our returning people have done so far. The reason why we prefer that is that it's as close to as possible as someone as the mice study, where they just remove the drug and that's it. That's why we're not looking for guys who are blasting and then they drop down to a TRT dosage, because that's not what happened in the mice study. And as you theorize there, you basically got three options. If you stop taking anabolic steroids, you come off cold turkey and you do nothing. And there is a massive amount of individuality of how quickly your own testosterone production will recover. It will depend heavily on how much you used, what compound you used and for how long, and even cycles you've done in the past and what your previous history is like. But there's some published research suggesting that in some people who are in endocrinology clinics who have been surveyed who have come off cold turkey, it can actually take them up to 2 years to recover, and some people never recover. And obviously they're going to feel awful because they're going to be in a hypogonadal, low testosterone state for many, many months, which is going to be very discomforting for somebody. And that's option number one. Option number two is that they'll do a post-cycle therapy. They'll take, gonadotropins. They'll take HCG and other things to kickstart their own testosterone production again, along the lines of what Dr. Dean would suggest, hopefully, if they've done their research. That will then facilitate to them bring back up their own testosterone production again, or they drop down to a TRT dosage. Ideally, for our research, we're looking for people who do a PCT, just because that's as close to them coming off, but is, to be honest, ethically better to look for people that are doing that, because that is probably best for them, and it's the closest comparison we've got in the mice study where they come off completely. So that's the reason why we're looking for that. And yes, you would also to think that if someone's testosterone bottoms out at zero and is at zero for a very long period of time, that they would lose more muscle mass than someone who manages that comeback of testosterone appropriately or goes on to TRT.
Yeah.
Yes.
So see when your participants come to you, do you check where their T levels are at? And then when they come back, do you check their T levels again?
Yeah, we take blood from the participants. At the moment, we and then we're freezing all the bloods, and eventually we will look at that. Yes, for sure. We are not able to give them that sort of information in real time, but we are freezing that to look out all in one go. It just means the research cost on us is a bit less if we do everything in one go. But
Ah,
yeah,
okay.
we will be looking at that for sure. Yes.
That makes sense because obviously research is funded, and if you were to do that, that's even
I
more of a
think in
cost.
it. In the best scenario, we would have actually facilitated that and done that for people in real time. But at the moment, no, we just store everything and we will look at it
Yeah,
in one go.
I tell you what would be worthwhile is maybe reaching out to Medichex or Youth Revisited to see if they could just do the analysing for you. Because, I mean, I think any decent coach out there listening, like the word anabolic steroids will go hand in hand with blood work.
Yes.
I know that I will not work with it, a client that uses steroids that doesn't get their bloods done, just because I think that okay, we're never going to be healthy, right? I totally get that, but we're going to try and do it in the quote unquote healthiest possible way, because there can be quite a lot of detrimental effects to bodily systems, and when a blood panel comes back, you can kind of go shit, such as whether it's like cholesterol, liver being off, etc., etc. So, would you say, like, with your participants, I guess you haven't looked at that, but was there any sort of other variables that you found that were perhaps a negative effect on, let's say, health or, mind in general? When they come off, did you look at, or are you looking at sort of their psychology of how they're feeling on versus off? Do you notice a difference in when they come the first time to they come the second time? Because personally, I'm different when I'm blasting and when I'm down at a TRT dose. But I guess that's more a psychological thing. So, have you noticed a difference at all?
I do interview all of them afterwards and ask them questions of how was your mood? Did you think you experienced low testosterone during your time coming off? How was your training, your motivation to train, your actual numbers in the gym, your consistency coming off? And then obviously we'll measure their muscle mass and things along, and then take the muscle biopsy so we can look at the nuclei numbers and everything. All the guys we've had actually that have returned so far, they say that maybe they felt a little bit down in the dumps a few weeks after coming off, but then they were initiating their PCT, and once that had taken course, they then felt normal. And one guy in particular, actually, I recall he just said that he sort of has been off for such a long time now that he's realized that for him it's not worth doing it anymore, and he doesn't want to do it anymore. And he was using compounds like trenbolone, and he doesn't like the way that made him feel, the anxiety he felt, the lack of sleep he got. And in general now, because he's come off and has bulked naturally, cut naturally, that he feels like he can do it naturally. It's going to might take a little bit more time, and he might not be as big as he was once was, but he feels like psychologically he is in a better place not using them, and that for him and that where he is in his life now is good enough reason for him to not use them in the foreseeable future. Things might change, but that was his current situation. One thing I have definitely noticed was a couple of the guys definitely. I mean, when we've measured their muscle mass, they've lost, potentially 5 kilograms of muscle or more, so they visually do look smaller. But that is to be expected. Because we're taking a muscle biopsy of the trapezius muscle, and the reason why we're doing that, it's been shown in the past to have higher levels of androgen receptor expression than other muscles in the body. And so, their delts just don't look as large, their traps don't look as large, but equally that could be because they've just lost total body muscle mass. But I'd say that you do notice that with the returning people, yeah.
I think if any listener out there is taking Tren, they can really relate to that guy, because it's not a fun compound at all. The lack of sleep is the reason why I don't use it, and why I preach to guys not to use it, because it is so strong. But that's just my opinion. I'm sure there's people out there that will disagree with me and say, oh, you can do this, that, and the next thing. But again, I always think that from a coaching perspective, you never prescribe. You always suggest, well, this is what you could do, and this is what I would do. But ultimately, it's not like our quote-unquote job as coaches to be like, here, go take that, because it's all our individual choice, right? But what I love is that, you know, effectively, you are the first study, you know, looking at myonuclei, and whenever the paper gets published, I'm sure that'll be a very proud moment for you.
It will be, yeah. I mean, we're looking for probably another couple of years. We're going to release some abstracts of the preliminary data we have at the moment from the 42 people we have biopsied and the 3 people we've had return. One guy did return, but he didn't want to be biopsied again, so we've had 4 people return, 3 successfully biopsied on both occasions. And I will be releasing those abstracts hopefully this year in 2020. And then we're hoping to continue the research project for another year and a half at least, and just try to recruit as many people as we possibly can to try and get our numbers as high as possible to make this the best effort that's been done to try and answer this question. Because it's obviously difficult. I mean, any study that involves humans is difficult. The travel, the transport, the ethics to get this approved has been difficult, and the money, it's a large amount of money. The biopsy equipment costs a lot of money. The equipment to store the muscle fibers appropriately for them to be looked at under the microscope costs a lot of money. The material, the genetic preservative to preserve all the genetic material in the muscle costs, and then the actual costs of then ordering the reagents to then do all of those analyses then costs even more, and it's even more time. So it does take a lot of work, but it will be worth it in the end. And I just want to make the most of this opportunity that we have in this time that we've been allocated to do this, to try and get as many people as possible so that this can be one of the best attempts at answering these questions in humans. And I think this will then encourage further research from more people. So if we find interesting things, then that will encourage other people to replicate this research and continue it on from that point onwards.
That's wicked. So if I was to ask you, I know that obviously you're currently working on this study, but with what you're hoping the study proves, do you have a bigger sort of goal in mind of what you want to delve into? Is there anything that goes like deeper down the rabbit hole that...
Yes, it's down the rabbit hole, yes, because this study's focused on myonuclei numbers, but we are preserving the muscle with all the genetic material inside the muscle. And I mentioned previously there was once a report available online that came from a study that looked at previous steroid users. This was the same research group that found out that the trapezius muscle has a high amount of androgen receptors compared to other muscles in the body. And they actually biopsied guys who had stopped taking anabolic steroids on average 1 year ago, but some of the guys had stopped taking 8 years or even 10 years ago. And what they did was they looked at all the proteins inside the muscle fibers. And muscle has got about 20,000 different proteins inside it. Wow. And they found out that in those guys that stopped taking steroid years ago, including the guy that stopped taking 10 years ago, about 80 of those muscle proteins were still different. And wow, that would suggest that that steroid exposure, even 10 years ago, had caused a difference inside their muscle fibers that was then being retained for those 10 years. Now, the only way that is really theoretically possible is that because their muscle has been exposed to super physiological levels of androgen receptor binding, those receptors, when they're binding to regions of DNA inside the muscle, they must be causing regions of those DNA to be more open, or opening regions that have not been opened in naturals, or keeping regions open for longer than would be in naturals, or some sort of binding there that binding's happened at an abnormal level has caused some sort of change in what regions of the DNA is open. And then that would then be why their proteins then different, and for that long period of time. So there's a retained memory there in what regions of the DNA have become open from the receptor. That's what you would call an epigenetic memory. And epigenetics is just a fancy term to describe things that are heritable but are caused from your environment. So you do something in your environment that might cause differences in your DNA, and that is then remembered, and that's what you call an epigenetic memory. And the idea here being is your environment is you've taken super physiological levels of a drug that's caused super physiological levels of receptor binding. It's caused changes to what regions of your DNA are opened.
yep.
to then what different proteins are being made. And if that's being retained for 10 years, and that's a long-lasting change, and that would be the next step from this research, would be to look at the DNA inside the muscle and try to see what regions of the DNA are potentially opened and closed, and is there a difference after superphysiological levels of receptor binding.
Yeah.
And so, as you say, the rabbit hole just goes on, because if that is true, then you would then want to, you know, validate that again in a different population of people. And it may be that the conclusion of this study is that it entices a actual administration study that can truly look at this question in a more controlled manner.
Yeah.
You know, there have been testosterone administration studies that have gone up to 600 milligrams a week for 20 weeks, okay. but they were conducted about 20 years ago now. And since then, there hasn't really been anything like that. So something like that could potentially be done again, maybe with different compounds, maybe for a shorter period of time. And you could then also monitor people through time and follow them up. And that might be another way that you could investigate this question. Or someone just replicates our study design and observes people again through time.
This might be a total absolute guess, but you mentioned that obviously it's 10 years and it's changed their DNA within the muscle fibers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you say that because we know that there's androgen receptors in, you know, quite a lot of tissues, that perhaps that it changes their complete DNA sequencing, and that if that's passed on down a generation, would that be inherited from perhaps the father?
So that would be transgenerational epigenetics inheritance. So transgenerational beings going from one generation father to next generation child. The only way transgenerational inheritance is possible is if a sequence in the sperm is changed.
Okay.
So if you change the DNA, what regions of the DNA being opened or closed in your muscle, or it may even be in your kidney, in your brain, in your skin, in your scalp, in your hair, etc., where we liver, where we all know there's androgen receptors. It would only be if it changed what regions of DNA were opened or closed inside your sperm that could then be inherited. I'm sure you've heard of Dave Crosland. He has a pet theory, because I've spoken to him about this research, that there may be some changes, but it's difficult in guys, because when they're on superphysiological levels of anabolic steroids, their spermatogenesis is not there. They're not making sperm. Yeah. So it's possible that there's no way there could then be a potential inheritance. For women, potentially, but even that's unlikely, because a lot of their eggs that a woman has, they're there, you know, pre-pubescent, around puberty time, even before then.
Yeah.
So there might not be any changes there either. So I don't think there would be changes in the sperm or eggs. Other people think they might do, but other parts of your body, I would say yes. And from that evidence of that guy that stopped 10 years ago, then that would suggest that would be true.
Definitely
for muscle, but we'll have to see.
My only thought would be that if someone was on and they were running something like HMG to stimulate FSH to then Sertoli cells...
That's me totally making,
you know, a fucking scenario, but I'm just saying it may happen. It was just for anyone listening that's thinking, right, are my kids going to be fucking jacked because I took gear 10 years ago? That's in layman's terms what I was asking. Yeah. But one thing I wanted to ask you, just because the listeners are probably thinking, we've been speaking about myonuclei for quite a while, but a lot of the time the word satellite cell can get thrown about in relation to anabolic steroids. And I think it's something that people... like some people are thinking, oh, this satellite cell, is that the same as myonuclei? Is that different? What's that? So I guess with people that say there's an increase in satellite cell proliferation when you use anabolic steroids and you do resistance training, could you give the listeners of, well, one, in layman's terms, what's a satellite cell? And then two, you know, why is that a benefit that there's an increase? Why is that different from a myonuclei in relation to just their major differences? So someone out there gets a bit more clarity on it.
So myonucleus would be a singular one, myonuclei is plural, and myonuclei are within the muscle fiber. So they're underneath the membrane of the fiber, and they're responsible for making the proteins inside the fiber. A satellite cell is called a satellite cell because, like a satellite, it orbits, and it's not inside underneath the membrane of the fiber, it's on the outside of the membrane of the fiber on top. And the satellite cell is actually the stem cell of muscle. So if muscle is damaged And we're talking about muscle injury here. So if you actually tear a muscle or it's damaged chemically, what will happen is the satellite cells, those stem cells, will get activated, and they can then result in that area of that muscle being repaired. In terms of muscle growth, when you resistance train, the tension created in your muscle fibers and other things like metabolite buildup and things along those lines can cause activation of the satellite cell. And the satellite cell will divide in two. One cell will remain a satellite cell so that you don't deplete the amount of satellite cells that you have. And the other satellite cell will then go through a whole cascade where it will eventually embed itself inside the fiber and become a true myonucleus. And that takes quite a while, and there's a whole pathway associated with the satellite cell embedding itself inside the fiber. And that's how you naturally accumulate nuclei from resistance training, is you activate the satellite cells and they then become true myonuclei. And with anabolic steroid usage, anabolic steroids will cause satellite cells to also become activated and donate themselves into the muscle fiber as myonuclei. And the administration studies in humans published about 20 years ago now of testosterone, they show that actually happens in the absence of resistance training. So if you're taking anabolic steroids and your resistance training, then you have both stimuli to cause myonuclei to accumulate. And obviously that's likely to happen at a faster and super physiological rate if you are taking super physiological dosages of anabolics.
Yeah, wicked. I think that it would just give people, like, that alone, again, is another like top explanation of, in the most layman's terms way you could give it, that if you, even if you don't understand science, I think you can understand exactly what you just said. So plenty of gold nuggets to sort of take home from today's episode. I think that the fact that you went from, okay, this kind of happened in mice and this is how we're trying to replicate it, but you're also considering that, well, there's a lot of limitations to it and there was a limitations to that research. It kind of shows that you fucking know what you're talking about.
There'll be limitations to our research as well. You know, we're constrained in doing an observational study for the ethical reasons. That means we're not controlling the drug cycle of the guys.
Let's say,
we're not,
right,
controlling their food or anything. So
could I interrupt
this
you and say,
the best we got. Yeah, yeah.
If ethics wasn't a thing, what would be the best study? What would be the gold standard? If ethics was like, right, you can do anything, what would be the specifics?
Well, I think it would be along the lines of what was done in the testosterone administration studies about 20 years ago, where they gave people a drug, GnRH, which actually shuts down their own testosterone production. So you basically flatline everybody. And then you give some people 100 milligrams, some people 200 milligrams, some people 400. They did 2, 4, I think they did 300 as well, 6. But anyway, they pyramided up to 600 and kept it there. They gave them to them for 20 weeks. And actually, for their study, they did not resistance train them, but in the ideal study, you would resistance train them as well. So you know that they would put on muscle mass. You don't never necessarily have to use testosterone only. It may even be more advantageous to use some other compounds as well, if there's no ethics involved. And then you would then take the drug away. And I guess what you would ideally do is put those people through a medically supervised post-cycle therapy so that you do make sure everyone gets back online with their own testosterone production, just for answering this question.
Yep.
And then you don't resistance train them at all, and you do nothing to them, and then you see how much muscle mass do they lose. Maybe in some of the people you do allow them to resistance train as well, so that you can see how that influences how much muscle mass you can retain. And then you'd measure their strength again and see ultimately, I mean, how many myonuclei do they retain or lose, maybe 6 months or more after.
I think that the one thing I could see that if there wasn't any ethics is you tell a bunch of guys that have taken gear not to train.
Yeah, they wouldn't want to do it.
it just wouldn't happen, because yeah. If someone said that to me, no matter how much money you paid me,
yeah.
I'd like, I'm going and I'm fucking giving it the beans on the hack squat, 100%.
Yeah.
Now, listen, I realise we're kind of short of time here, but what I wanted to do is give you an opportunity to to give the listeners an idea of how they can get in contact with you, maybe drop your Instagram handle, website, email, that'd be fab.
Yes, so the best way to get a hold of me is to email me. I'm sure you'll put my email in the box. Yep. And as I said, if you're a male, aged 20 to 40 years old, living anywhere in the United Kingdom or Europe, and you'd be interested to come and take part in our research, you'll get a DEXA scan, which would be interesting for you because that's considered the gold standard technology to measure your muscle mass and your body fat percentage. We'll also give you assessment of bone density as well, which should be just interesting as well for you. And we're looking specifically at this moment in time only for guys that are currently taking anabolic steroids. Ideally, they then planned on cycling off, conducting their own PCT, and then coming back so we can measure this difference in their muscle mass. Or they can be a past anabolic steroid user who stopped taking anabolic steroids one or more years ago. Or you could potentially be on TRT as long as you inform me of your dosage and your last physiological exposure, your current dosage of TRT, so we can work out, are you a past user or not? You can find more about the research if you search my advertisement on Instagram, Alex_K_T is my handle. You'll find more about the advert on there. You can also just search Alex KT Muscle Memory on Facebook. You'll see some public posts. And you can read the advertisement and some more details. And we can reimburse all of your travel expenses, including one night's accommodation. And even if you can't take part or you're not eligible or you don't want to, I really would appreciate you just sharing it or telling some of your friends about it. You never know who is interested. Social media has proven the most effective way for us to recruit people. And obviously, everyone is anonymized. I'll be the only person that you speak to about usage with anyone in the researchers that you'll come across, because there's other people that will measure your muscle mass or take your blood, etc., do the muscle biopsy, but I'm the only person that will talk to you about our usage. You don't have to talk about anybody else about that, and you get anonymized into a participant code, letters and numbers, and beyond that point, there's no reference to you anymore, and we have to have strict anonymity to ethically be allowed to do something like this. So that's everything. If someone just shares the advert, I'll be greatly appreciative of it. Or email me, message me on Instagram, and we can take the conversation further, have a phone call, discuss your travel. And at the moment, Sunday the 5th of April is our next biopsy date, and on Saturday the 4th of April we'd have your muscle mass measured.
Good. And what I'm just going to add is that if anyone's thinking of doing it but they're worried about coming off and they need they want advice or any to speak about it to another bodybuilder, I'm happy to jump on a Skype call for 15 minutes just so that people will go down and see you, because some guys might be worried psychologically of this, that, and the next thing. They might not know what PCT is. But just to help you out, man, I'd be happy to just jump on call with someone for 10, 15 minutes to give them non-impartial advice. It wouldn't be classed as advice, it'd just be classed as a conversation, because medically that's not ethical, right? But whatever you are, whatever you do, from me and Alex, give it the beans.